United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, known as the IPCC, released a new report last week warning of imminent and severe consequences from rising global temperatures. The report found that the Earth is likely to pass a dangerous temperature threshold and suffer irreversible damage in the next 10 years unless we take more drastic action to combat climate change. But the IPCC has put out at least three dozen reports warning about the dangers of climate change going back to 1990, but the U.S. and other countries still haven't taken the kind of major steps that the UN has called for. We're learning more about the types of social, political, and institutional obstacles that stand in the way of more substantial climate action. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Why do you think we haven't seen a stronger fight against climate change? Are there changes you would like to see made? What do you see as the barriers to those changes? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Brad Mapes-Martins is with us, Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Stevens Point, where he researches climate change, sustainability, and environmental policy. Brad, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, Jeremiah Bohr, Associate Professor of Sociology at UW-Oshkosh. He studies the institutional and behavioral obstacles to sustainability and climate change. Jeremiah, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you.
Jeremiah, let's start with you. Now, you are working, I understand, with a unique data set looking at political polarization and how it affects climate change. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're working with and what you're starting to find?
The big project I'm working on right now is I have a large archive of social media posts from members of Congress. Specifically from Twitter. So I have a little under 3 million tweets dating back to 2015 that I've been working with. And I'm interested in a lot of things, but climate change among them. And one of the really striking early findings that I've found so far is that, somewhat on an optimistic note, we're becoming a little bit less polarized in how we talk about climate change by how our political representatives talk about it. It hasn't really translated into how we vote about climate issues yet, but I do find a little bit of optimism that at least the conversation seems to be veering towards a common understanding of the problem at hand.
And Brad, how much has political polarization been a part of the story when it comes to the U.S. Response to climate change?
I don't think it can be understated. I mean, going back for at least two decades, climate change has been not just a polarized issue, but in many cases, the most polarized issue when you kind of rank the different ways that partisans feel about public policies. And so it's very kind of positive to hear Dr. Bohr talking about the signs of kind of a little bit of depolarization going on in civic communication.
Jeremiah, one part of the story, since you're looking at a data set that includes members of Congress from the whole country, is, you know, are places feeling more climate change impacts? So they're, you know, behaving one way, whereas places that are so far more insulated are another? Or is this a local, I guess, response or a nationalized response? What are you seeing?
Yeah, that's really interesting because it's actually the parts of the country that are most vulnerable to climate change who have the representatives who talk about it the least. So the conversation is in a lot of ways, it's being driven by representatives of constituents who are relatively speaking least vulnerable to climate change. So there's a lot of interesting patterns in the politics of how we talk about climate change. And so depolarization is one optimistic tone that I would strike, but another, you know, maybe a little bit more worrying tone would be that the places that need to be thinking about it the most simply are not yet.
Brad, one kind of assumption of this conversation is, okay, the U.S. has set targets on climate change at various points. International treaties have set targets for the U.S. and other industrialized countries. How do you evaluate, Brad, how the U.S. performance has stacked up to the various milestones that have been set?
I mean, in comparison to the expectations as they've been laid out in treaties, I think it's hard to be, satisfied with the way that the U.S. has performed insofar as we frequently kind of undershot our goals. That being said, though, one of the kind of big questions in political science has been the extent to which treaties operate from goals first and then try to work back, you know, and try to establish what nations will do rather than working from what nations can do, politically speaking, and then figure out what the likely targets would be from that.
We are talking to Brad Mapes-Martins, political scientist at UW-Stevens Point, and Jeremiah Bohr, sociologist at UW-Oshkosh, looking at climate change. You know, there's the science out there, another UN report saying the horizon, the time horizon for action on climate change keeps getting shorter if we want to prevent the worst. We're talking about, well, what's keeping us from taking action, what leads to some kinds of action being taken, not others. You can join in with your thoughts, your experiences, maybe your questions for our guests at 800-642-1234. What do you think stands in the way of more serious climate change action? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@wpr.org. Jeremiah, we've talked about polarization some so far. What do you see as some of the other obstacles for a country like the United States in taking more action on climate change?
You know, with something like climate mitigation, a lot of this has to do with who are going to be the relative winners and losers of the drastic changes that might need to be made. And so I think some of this just comes down to where are the economic benefits going to spread? And I think that feeds into a lot of the polarization, because I think there is a sense that Republican and Democrats, they tend to represent different types of economies in terms of the industries that might be most impacted by aggressive climate mitigation. And so I think to some extent that there is a fear that that a greener economy might leave some behind. And I think that there are some pretty strong partisan patterns to at least where those fears are. And I do think that policymakers seem to be paying attention to that, because the Inflation Reduction Act does seem to be targeting some more red state districts in where some of these greener benefits are going to be geographically located.
Brad, I talked to Jeremiah some about his work on members of Congress. Some of your work focuses really at the local level. What kind of things do you see when it comes to climate action and sustainability when you zoom in on local efforts?
Well, I mean, speaking just within, for instance, Wisconsin, I am generally, you know, find that at the local level, one of the sort of strengths that we have is that young people are energetic about doing something about climate change. And that is one, it's a lot of kind of civic energy that we need to see directed towards it. And hopefully what that means is that we'll see a sustained effort over time, because to sort of, you know, add to what Jeremiah just said, that we have kind of a political system that is kind of limiting the way that we can move forward on climate change, simply because there's so many opportunities for partisans to veto changes. And so we have to have political effort that takes place over a long period of time. And so my local kind of site is still to focus on primarily where we see young people kind of energized, even before they're old enough to vote.
And Brad, you've compared the U.S. With places in Europe and I believe Australia when it comes to these kind of local climate change activism efforts. What compare and contrast for us?
Well, I mean, in some ways, there's actually some strong similarities between places like Australia and the United States in the way that the issue of climate change became polarized. But one thing that we've seen, particularly in parts of Europe and in the UK, is that there are kind of forums that have allowed for the depolarization of this issue. It was never quite as bad in sort of areas like France or Germany. We never saw that level of polarization, so they didn't have as much to overcome. But at the local level, we've seen an emphasis on dialogue that builds kind of a common sense of, I won't say unity around it, but at least takes away some of the tension that comes out of what Jeremiah pointed out earlier, which is these even the perception of conflicting interests, that one group may be harmed more than another.
We're talking to Brad Mapes-Martins, UW-Stevens Point political scientist, and Jeremiah Bohr, UW-Oshkosh sociologist. We're looking at the obstacles keeping us from doing more to combat climate change. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What barriers do you see preventing more action against climate change? What do you think about members of Congress and how they have tackled the issue? How about at the local level? Do you see some of that youth participation in this issue that Brad was talking about just a few minutes ago? Are you one of those youth participating in efforts against climate change? What are you working toward? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll pick up that conversation coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We'll pick up our talk about climate change and why we don't always see a lot of action to fight it, at least not meeting international treaty targets, for example, even as scientists from around the world warn of dire consequences. Our guests today are UW-Stevens Point political science professor Brad Mapes-Martins and UW-Oshkosh sociology professor Jeremiah Bohr. They both research environmental policy and politics, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Are there changes you'd like to see made to fight climate change? What kind of things do you see in your community, your state, your country that maybe make you feel positive on the issue? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email ideas@WPR.org. Let's go to your calls now. Willem is with us in Colfax. Hi, Willem.
Hi. I just want to say that we've known about this for a long time. I'm 72 years old, and I remember when I was in my late 20s, people were talking about climate change. And then in the 1990s, you know, Al Gore, the much mocked Al Gore, had a really powerful film of what is going on in the climate. And like leaders at the time, one of the first things Ronald Reagan did was he took the solar panels off the White House. That, you know, ceded the industry to like China and other countries, and same with wind. And
Willem, I got you. We got some background noise there, but I think the point taken. Jeremiah, Willem worried that the warnings were there for a long time and unheeded, or I guess only partially heeded. What do you think about the roads not traveled that Willem sees?
I mean, yeah, the discussion of climate change has been around for a very long time. Scientists have been talking about global climate change for many decades. It does seem like in American public discourse that it really only became a popular problem, meaning, you know, a lot of people became aware of it maybe only about 10 to 20 years ago, somewhere in that time frame. I think Al Gore's documentary did have quite a bit to do with raising awareness of it, which I think was around 2007 or so. It has taken a gradual buildup, and as Brad mentioned earlier, there is a lot of buildup of youthful energy around this. I think that's been a pretty big part of this too, that activists have really gotten energized and are really pushing the ball forward. And I expect that we're actually going to see that much more momentum going forward. I think we're really just at the cusp of getting a bit more serious and the political salience really taking hold.
Willem, thanks for calling in at 800-642-1234. Mark joins us now in Richland Center. Mark, hi.
Hello. Two things. The largest contributor to climate effects is the military-industrial complex. They're the largest consumer of fossil fuels. And so unless the climate activists are also anti-war activists, I don't see much happening. Second point, as long as money equals debt, there's never enough money. And the only thing that happens then is greater and greater consumption of the natural environment. Those two things alone are never going to stop the destruction of the environment unless we take them on.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. Brad, Mark pointing toward what he sees, I think, as structural as institutional obstacles to taking climate action. What do you think?
Certainly there are institutional, kind of features that make it more difficult. And I think, you know, that it goes to my previous point about needing sustained effort over time. That being said, you know, climate change is a result of something that's baked into the way that we live our lives, or the way that we consume energy. And this is something that has made it very difficult for us to confront. Even when we have people who are aware of the problem and who want to change it, there's still obstacles in place. You know, I think of the referendum in Washington State in 2016, which seemed like a pretty ripe moment for a state to pass a carbon tax, and it didn't carry through, right? Even though it was a popular referendum that bypassed the ability of the legislature to kind of veto it immediately. And so in that case, right, these obstacles are something that we're going to need to contend with in a way that both kind of respects the social side of how it impacts individual lives, as Jeremiah was talking about earlier, and then also recognizes that there are kind of political features that features of our political system that are certainly challenging in terms of producing change.
Thanks a lot for that call, Mark, at 800-642-1234. Talking to Brad Mapes-Martins, UW-Stevens Point political scientist, and Jeremiah Bohr, UW-Oshkosh sociologist, looking at climate change, not the science and the nuts and bolts of it, but some of the obstacles in our political system and our social system to taking action on it. Still time for you to join in if you'd like at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Jeremiah, I understand as a sociologist, you look at sustainability and climate change as they reflect our values, our individual values. Do you see clashes, not just so much as far as political polarization, but, you know, we have values like independence or economic opportunity and things like that. Are those kind of core values for some people outweighing environmental and sustainability values?
To some extent, yes. I do think that that is at play, especially when we drill down to this, the level of individuals, to the extent that climate policy is going to be interpreted as this is putting limits on my lifestyle, on my consumer freedom, things like that. I think it is, particularly in the American context, perhaps others too, but I do think that that is one obstacle that that has to be met. And again, I think when we look at some of the age divides in public opinion, younger people seem to approach that obstacle a little bit differently than some older generations do. So I think it does play out differently in different parts of our demographics, but absolutely that is absolutely a one big obstacle.
Brad, when it comes to election time, I think a lot of people may be concerned about climate change, but it never seems to emerge as the hottest issue that politicians are talking about. Maybe, I don't know, that might be the fault of the media in the issues we talk about. I don't know. Why do you think that climate change hasn't been as hot an election day issue, and at least in many elections?
Well, I think one of the main reasons we see this is that kind of more immediate concerns can take over. I mean, if we look back at levels of concern about climate change going back, you know, approximately 15 or 20 years, we see that during, for instance, the 2008, you know, 2009 kind of financial crisis and the recession that followed, levels of concern dropped about climate change, even though there's no intrinsic reason why that should be. We can be concerned about two different things, right? And it's in part just the immediacy of some issues takes over. And that may be a result of media coverage. I know that, you know, one of the kind of areas of research in political science that I've engaged in is how complicated it is for media to portray climate change in a way that is sort of engaging to an audience and also not kind of further entrench the polarization of the issue.
Jeremiah, I want to take us back to our starting point here. You were talking about signs, at least in your social media data set, that polarization may be decreasing. What would you be watching for next to see if that is in fact true and if it results in further action?
Well, ultimately, it's only going to be useful if it translates into votes. And we have not seen that yet. And so just to recognize the elephant in the room, political polarization, partisan cues, things like that, that is the number one obstacle, in my opinion, in our political system to addressing climate change. And the optimistic side of me notes that where my study begins in 2015, 2016, politicians are arguing with each other about the science to a greater degree than they are today. And so there does seem to be, in terms of the debate, there's a, I don't know if I'd call it a consensus yet, but it's at least we're not as far apart in how we talk about it as we used to be. And I can compare this with other issues like abortion or gun rights, immigration. Climate change is far less polarizing today than those other issues and how our politicians talk about it on social media. So that's the optimism, but at what point does that mean that we can translate that into votes? That's tricky. I think it ultimately means that we have to get people seeing themselves as benefiting from the policies that get proposed. And that's much easier said than done. And as I mentioned earlier, I do think that there's been some real intentional citing of the benefits in the Inflation Reduction Act. It seems like they are really targeting some conservative parts of the country to try to bring them into some of the economic benefits that we're trying out with the IRA.
And we'll leave it there. Jeremiah, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you.
And Brad, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Brad Mapes-Martins is Associate Professor of Political Science at UW-Stevens Point. Jeremiah Bohr, Associate Professor of Sociology at UW-Oshkosh, with us today to talk about the social, political, and economic barriers we face in tackling climate change.